A mochi moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
I'm John Batchelor with Bill Raggio and Jonathan Saya of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Iran has surrogates, and are they attending to them? We go right now to a report, Jonathan, you filed it along War Journal, about the IDF or the IAF or a drone striking an IRGC member in southern Lebanon. At the same time, we have a detention or more of a Quds Force unit in Syria. What is the thinking about the Iranians? Are they putting people back in? Are they lighting up their networks that are in place? And what is the aim?
Ultimately, when you look at the recent operations by the IDF in the Levant, let's say, it just highlights that number one, on one hand, we thought that Iran was able to curb its influence a little bit, or better to be more accurate, the new regime in Syria was able to curb Iranian influence in the Levant. And that is both true and not. So, of course, we know Iran is struggling with weapons shipments to Lebanese Hezbollah because they lost the Syria corridor. But at the same time, some of these operations suggest that Iranian influence has not totally reached an impasse when it comes to their funding their proxies in Syria and in Lebanon. So that's one angle to take away. Another thing that really stood out to me is how Iran had, prior to the collapse of the Assad regime, had used Syria to specifically further develop this very particular unit that's used for operations in Europe. So the fact that they were leveraging the chaos in Syria to further stand up their operational capacities in Europe really, really stood out to me. And that's something that the IDF uncovered in the last few weeks.
Bill, you have a question.
Yes, this strike targeted what's known as Quds Force Unit 840. What can you tell us about the importance of that unit, particular unit, and how well has the Israelis how effective has the Israelis been at targeting the leadership and the rank and file of Unit 840?
That's an excellent question. So when we're talking about the IRGC, we're talking about their Quds Force division that is tasked with executing external operations around the world. This particular unit operates under the Quds Force that is particularly recently tasked with assassination plots of dissidents, Americans, Jews, and Israelis in America, but mostly in Europe. It's part of the greater network called the quote-unquote German network that Iranians have been using. So they're mostly for transnational repression. That has been at least the recent use of these. And what has been very interesting about Israeli operations is that they've been able to target the leadership of this unit, not only in Syria, but also inside Iran. So there was one particular person that was carrying out these operations in coordinations with the German Hells Angels against Jewish targets in Germany. And actually the Mossad waited for this person to go back to Iran before they assassinated him to try to avoid escalating things with the German authorities. So if you look at just their operations going on, they're leveraging criminal networks all over the world. Hells Angels might be one case in both Canada and Germany. But when we're talking about this particular unit, it's interesting that they've shifted their focus from Syria to Europe.
In your most recent report, Jonathan, as you well know, Iraq is mentioned as a new route or a reawakened route to get money to Hezbollah. How does it work?
As we discussed the collapse of the Assad regime and the implications for the Islamic Republic, the main issue continues to be transport of weapons, because the Hezbollah continues to be the crown jewel of the Islamic Republic, and they would do anything to prevent it from collapsing. I know to an extent Hezbollah is economically self-sufficient, but they ultimately need Iranian support. So in this context, they're more and more trying to leverage their ties with the national Iraqi government to see if they can find new smuggling routes into Syria and hopefully back into Lebanon or directly into Lebanon if possible through airplanes. But what we've seen so far is that Iraqis are not really giving in. They know that Trump is watching them really, really closely. He's talked about militia integration, which we don't know if that's going to be a realistic demand or not, or whether it's feasible. But ultimately, they're aware that the Trump administration, both in the first and second term, is very particular about what they envision for Iraq. And for the Iraqi national government to sacrifice that relationship with the U.S. administration just to aid the Islamic Republic to find new smuggling routes seems very unlikely. And that is, and I think that's an example of how Washington's pressure against Baghdad actually works. And that is an example of results that if we effectively pressure these administrations in Iraq is under Sudani or whomever, we can actually curb Iranian influence.
So you're Jonathan, are you reporting a success for the U.S. operations in Iraq? Is that what you're saying?
Indirectly, absolutely. I think that is a good first step. We've seen this administration actually prevent a few, Iranian milestones to be reached inside Iraq, politically speaking. That was just one example. I think there are better examples out there. One of them being U.S. pressure preventing a legislation in Iraq to take place. This legislation, in theory, would have further enshrined Iran-backed militias into Iraq's political and economic landscape. And because of U.S. pressure, that legislation is no longer being considered. That's just one example. So more and more, there's been new reports coming out. And of course, another one being when the early stages of the administration, when they actually halted sanction waivers for Iranian energy. Of course, there's a distinction between gas and electricity. They halted sanction waivers for electricity. Gas is still in place. But again, more and more, we've seen examples of if the U.S. with full determination actually pressures Baghdad, the Iraqis themselves are more open to absorbing this pressure and actually not letting it strain their ties between Baghdad and Washington and curb the regime's influence across the country.
Bill, we have time for a quick question.
Yes, the Iraqi official government maybe not be on board with the support for Hezbollah, but given the how well ingrained the Iraqi militias that are backed by Iran are inside of Iraq, isn't that a logical path for the Iranians to pursue to covertly get aid to Hezbollah via Iraq?
We have a minute.
Iranians will try their best to leverage both side of things. One side, of course, is let's call it the malign or the illicit side being through the militias. But the regime wants to play the political game in these countries to the best of their ability because in an ideal scenario, they don't have to leverage these illegal means. So, of course, the first first course of action is for them to try to elicit something formal from the Iraqi government. But ultimately, their plan B continues to be their militias, of course. But the issue with that is the more they leverage these militias in these settings to one, bypass Syria and just go directly for Lebanon, that makes them a direct target of both U.S. and Israeli attacks. That's perhaps why in the context of Iraq, they're trying to more go through the formal process instead of making their militias more of a target and open season for Israeli attacks.
We thank Jonathan Saya for bringing us up to date on the fog of war that's settling over the whole region after the B-2 raid and the damage, severe damage to the Iranian ability to make war. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracy.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
A mochi moment from Tara, who writes, "For years, all my doctor said was eat less and move more, which never worked. But you know what does? The simple eating tips from my nutritionist at Mochi. And after losing over 30 pounds, I can say you're not just another GLP-1 source. You're a life source. Thanks, Tara. I'm Myra Ahmed, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Tara is a Mochi member compensated for her story.